It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome back to Money for Lunch. Good to have you here after the weekend, right? Mondays are kind of exciting. You know, it's kind of interesting to me, and I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but you know, when you work for yourself, Mondays are exciting. When you work for somebody else, maybe they're not as exciting, right? When you love what you do, you can't wait for Mondays. In fact, holidays are kind of interruptions, needed interruptions, because I think it's good to spend time with the family. But it's the difference between entrepreneurial mindset and a employee mindset. They're both good, but just different. All right. Hey, my first guest today is the one, the only, Tom Hopkins. Tom Hopkins carries the standard as a master sales trainer and is recognized as the world's leading authority on selling techniques and salesmanship. Tom personally conducts 30 seminars each year, traveling throughout the world. He is the author of 18 books, including How to Master the Art of Selling, which has sold over 1.6 million copies worldwide. His latest book is titled When Buyers Say No and is receiving phenomenal reviews from sales professionals across the planet. Tom Hopkins is the guy who literally launched the sales training category. I don't know a sales trainer today who has not stood on Tom Hopkins' shoulder and launched their career using Tom Hopkins' books, tapes, audios, and seminars. Tom Hopkins, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Well, thank you, Bert. Always good to be back with you, my friend.
Always good to have you here, too, man. I'm excited about today's topic. We're going to be talking about buying signs, and I want to dive into this. What is a buying sign?
Well, it's something that the buyer, of course, would do or say that is in a way saying we're getting more interested or it's time for us to say yes. And so being my background for 8 years was real estate, the selling of a home or a property, there was lots of things that people would do or say that let me know that they're getting closer to wanting to write a check and say yes. But I really think that regardless of the product or service, Bert, that the buying signs can be used. And I think that there's basically two types. There are verbal and then there are visual. And I thought what I would kind of do is go through the 4 verbal and the 5 visual so the folks listening can kind of say, all right, I'm going to watch for that when I'm doing my next presentation or showing my product. But so let's start off with the verbal. These are things that the buyer would say or do verbally. And the first one is they ask you to repeat information you've covered. Now, this happens when a husband and wife are, let's say, looking at a product. One of them wants to go ahead. The other one is kind of holding back. And the one that's going ahead will then maybe say to you as the salesperson, Tom, would you go over that again? I don't know if Mary caught that. And I think it's important that she does. So that's the first verbal, asking you to repeat information so that they, again, clarify their thinking and get closer to the yes. The second one is basically asking more questions. People do not ask questions unless they're increasing the interest and the knowledge is necessary to make the buying decision. So that is definitely a buying sign. And then, of course, number 3 would be making what we call positive statements, saying things like, you know, this really makes sense, or I wish we had known about this sooner, or this is something we really should do. Tom, I'm so glad you're sharing this with us. I think this insurance program is going to be wonderful. So that's the third one, positive statements. And then the fourth one is actually what we call making buying noises. Now, this is particularly true, Bert, when they've made a no-purchase pact before they meet you, meaning the husband and wife are coming in to see you or looking at your product, coming into your office, whatever. And before they come in, they know it's a selling situation, so they have a discussion. And the husband might say, now, Mary, don't get too excited. We're not sure we're going to buy anything now. We're only getting information. Or the wife might say, now, you always just are so interested to buy things, but money's tight right now. So let's not let them know we're interested. So that's called the no-purchase pact that a couple would make. Then, of course, they all of a sudden start getting interested in the product. They've said they couldn't talk. But primarily the woman would start making maybe buying noises, things like, Now, she's not talking, but that noise she's making is in the verbal buying sign category. So as a salesperson, you really want to be sensitive to those four because they are little signs that let you know it's time to go closer into closing the actual sale.
All right. And so just to clarify this, you know, everything we're talking about today can be used really in any sales situation, whether you're selling, you mentioned life insurance, real estate, automobiles, you're selling, what do you call it, copiers or maybe you're selling warranties or whatever it is you're selling, these things that you're talking about apply.
Definitely. And that's why I really worked this morning before we started our call to kind of isolate and really give the folks concrete things that they can actually start memorizing to watch for in a presentation when they're showing their product.
I love it. All right. So we have the four verbal and then you said there's a couple of physical?
No, there's five visual.
Five visual.
So we have four verbal and five visual. Now, the first visual is just a change in their demeanor, meaning they came in or they started when you were showing your product or service. They were kind of cold. They had a sour look on their face.
Standoffish.
Kind of like we're not buying today and you're not selling us anything, feeling attitude. And then all of a sudden they start changing. The main reason is they feel good about what you're saying. They feel they're getting education. They feel they're learning ideas or something to have a better life. So they warm up to you a little bit. They almost might smile. You might say something that you've built into your presentation that elicits some humor, and they really do either give you a chuckle or they smile. So number one is warming up from their kind of cold demeanor. The second visual is moving closer to the table or desk where you are presenting, meaning they started off with their back against the chair, maybe a foot away from the actual desk, and now all of a sudden you can see them. Besides warming up their demeanor, they move their chair closer, and if they put their arms on the actual desk or table of presentation, this is a very good, positive sign that they're getting closer to wanting to say yes. And then, of course, number three is they were sitting there with their arms folded. And there is truth to that, that body language plays a tremendous role in the selling process. And so they're sitting there, arms folded, or one of them is, and all of a sudden as you are presenting and they're warming up, all of a sudden they unfold their arms, which again is physical, visual, that they're getting more interested in what you're saying. And then, of course, number four would be they nod with you in agreement to something you say. And I can remember so vividly that I would make a statement or ask a question, and especially the one that was kind of leaning more towards going ahead would really physically give a very good nod and look at the other partner, the husband or wife, and almost want them to nod their head agreement. And then, of course, number five, this would be primarily, of course, with husband and wife. But if they show any degree of affection, and this can be as simple as a glance at each other affectionately. I remember when I would be showing homes, and again, I had this feeling that they were trying to hide their actual feelings, not letting me know they liked the property. But then they're walking through the home, and I never looked at the home. I knew the home. I'm watching their body language when they're looking at a property. And if there's any degree of affection shown, where maybe she reaches over and just gives him a pinch on the arm, that's a visual buying sign. Or I had a couple times I caught the man giving her a little pat on the backside, which you wouldn't do in front of a stranger, me, unless you were saying to her, okay, I'm feeling good about what we're seeing here. So that's another buying sign. And I think that too many people in sales are not sensitive to these things, and they miss these clues. And as I've said, I think the last or two or three times we were on the program together, that you've got to almost be like a detective. The detective is looking for clues. If you remember the famous Peter Falk as Columbo.
Yeah.
I mean, he came across like such a bimbo, such a nutcase. They all relaxed in front of him because they thought, he can't close us, he can't make our sale, he can't catch me and put me in jail.
Right.
And that was his strategy of acting like he was a nut, not knowing what he was doing, stumbling, talking slow, acting like he didn't get it. But all the time he knew were exactly where he was going in his, in essence, presentation to close these people on the fact they were going to jail, if you follow me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I love it. All right, so let's I'm going to do a quick recap here because this stuff is so good. And this applies to any kind of sales situation. It also is something that you can practice. The great thing about our show is you can download it. You can listen to it over and over again. So verbal are things like the customer starts to repeat information. More questions show number two is they start to show they start to ask more questions, shows an interest, an increasing interest. Number three is positive statements. Hey, this stuff, I wish I would have known about this stuff sooner. And then number four is making buying noises. such as a positive and then the vision. I love these visionary ones. Changing appearance. They go from being standoffish and cold to they start warming up. Maybe they're scooting in closer, number two. Number three, they unfold their arms. They start to really open up. They go from being way back on the chair to now they're really close in, or they're putting their arms on your desk. Number four, nodding in agreement. Love the nodding in agreement. And then number five, and this is really a subtle one. This is the one that Tom is saying that a lot of us miss because we don't think about it, and that is the public display of affection. When they start showing affection to one another, you may miss that and think that they're obviously just being affectionate, but they're not going to do that in a sales scenario unless they're feeling good about what they're seeing or what they're hearing. So those are some great, great tips, 9 tips in total, and this is fantastic. And if you want to get more tips from Tom, oh, I like that. More tips from Tom. You can go to tomhopkins.com. Tom literally has a wealth of information there, from seminar dates to audios to books, everything that you'd ever want to know to increase your sales, increase your business, train your salespeople can go to tomhopkins.com. Am I right, Tom?
That's right. We've got a lot for them and sure love to have those salespeople increase their incomes.
Absolutely. Tom Hopkins, thank you so much, my friend, for stopping by. Always good to have you here, Tom.
Thank you, Bert. All the best to you and all of your listeners. Appreciate you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Good stuff there from Tom Hopkins. Just a fantastic individual. I've gotten to know Tom, and he is just that way in life as he is on stage, I should say, in person as he is on stage. Just a fantastic, warm-hearted individual. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Caller Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right. We are back. Having a great time. It's good to be back in the saddle here after the weekend. All right. So here we are. My next guest, Danette Gossett. Danette is founder of Gossett Marketing, co-founder of Promotions Resource, and co-author of the best-selling book Transform with Brian Tracy. Danette utilizes her more than 30 years of advertising agency and corporate marketing experience to develop effective promotional campaigns and products for her clients. Danette has received a number of industry awards and recognition, including the EXPE Award from the National Association of Experts, Writers and Speakers, Hot Creative from Direct Marketing Magazine. Top 25 Promotional Products Industry Influencer by Quality Certification Alliance and Decade of Excellence Award from the Women's Business Development Council of Florida. You can find out more about Danette at Gossett Marketing, spelled MKTG.com. Danette Gossett, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Well, thank you for having me.
You bet. All right. So let's get into this. You know, with your experience, do you find that a lot of businesses simply do not understand advertising and marketing? They look at it as an expense, and they really just simply don't like to do it because they don't understand it.
You've hit the nail on the head. That's exactly how most people do. I'm always amazed that people, sometimes their first encounter with advertising is when they're going out of business. And they start putting up the signs, putting in the ads, you know, going out of business sale, because they do see advertising marketing as an expense. They don't see it as an investment in the growth of their business. And that is one of the hardest things that we have to try and really teach our clients and individuals in general, especially entrepreneurs that are starting out. They don't think they can afford it. Many times they'll come to me and say, hey, I know you can probably help me. And then when I tell them what we might be able to do, they're like, oh, I can't afford that. And they want to spend $500 for the year to get their name out there and to get people to come to their business. And it just doesn't work that way. There's not much you can do. I mean, now with social media, you can do a good amount free, but it doesn't really help if you don't have a plan, and that it doesn't really extend your brand past social media if you're not doing other forms of marketing as well. So it is an education process for just about everybody.
Right, right. No, I like that. We see this all the time. Is somebody will spend $100,000 or $200,000 opening their doors and not have any budget for marketing.
Exactly.
And it's just so crazy. Guys, you really need to flip it around. You must spend at least $100,000. If you're going to invest $100,000 to open your doors, I would basically say you need to have that much to market your business. And the most important part of any business is the marketing. That's it. And I don't know why that is so hard for people to grasp. And I think part of it is, there's a myth started by Waldo Emerson. What's his last name? Anyway, so he talks about if you make a better mousetrap, the world will beat a path to your door.
The world will come. Exactly. If you build it, they will come.
Yes, yes. And that's – I don't know how that myth is stuck, but it's not true, guys. It is a myth. It sounds great because Emerson wrote it. It sounds fantastic, and on theory, that would be correct. But It's if you create a better marketing plan, that's how you're going to get the people, you know, beating on your door. Doesn't matter how good your product is. It really doesn't. It really matters how important your marketing is. Anyway, let's move on. excuse me. Couldn't hit the cough button. All right, so let's talk about your latest book. You wrote a chapter in the book Transform, and specifically about sales promotion, transforming your business from survival to thriving. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, going back to what you were just talking about with people not understanding the marketing aspect of it, you know, when you are initially putting your business out there, you know, you're trying to get people to understand who and what you are. You know, what are your products and services? What are you going to be bringing to them? How are you going to solve a problem they may have? Because that's what we're all trying to do in business is, you know, I have a service and I'm trying to solve a problem that you have, or I have a product and I'm going to try to solve a problem that you have with my product. Same thing goes with sales promotion. What we're trying to do with sales promotion, it's a part of your marketing plan, but the sales promotion is making sure that you buy something now, not tomorrow, not in the future, not 6 months from now, not a year from now. Sales promotions are basically designed to make you feel that your need is now. Maybe it's a need to save money. Maybe it's a need for a new service. Whatever it may be, what sales promotion does is trying to make sure that you're taking care of it now. When you're doing a branding campaign, you're just telling people what the types of business you have, the types of services that you provide, and it doesn't really incentivize you to buy today. And what sales promotion does is basically tries to get you to buy today. And what my chapter talks about is the ways that, you know, lots of times businesses aren't, you know, maybe they are spending money on marketing, but they're not bringing people in the door because people don't feel that immediate need. So what we were talking about is how sales promotions can make people come in now. It's not a long-term strategy. You can have sales promotion as a part of your long-term strategy, but it's not like you want to be having the same sale priced items every week in the newspaper or on the radio or wherever you might be, you know, putting that message out there, because then all of a sudden that just becomes your new discounted price. It's not really a sale anymore. But you can have a sale but just have it different items every month. And it doesn't have to be a sale. It could be buy one, get one free. It can be there's just a lot of different things that you can do to make people want to come in and purchase from you today versus tomorrow or next week. And sometimes that is the difference from survival to thriving.
Sure. Sure. You know what? And I want to talk about this because here's something else that I think people are afraid of. They're afraid to market to their list or their audience or whatever you want to call it. They're afraid that these people are going to be offended. And I found that not to be true. I mean, yes, you might have a few people who might unsubscribe from your list, but primarily if that happens, I've always found that those people have moved on anyway. They're not buying your stuff. What's your take on that? Is you know, can you overpromote?
Yes, I do think you can overpromote, but I agree with you that most of the time you should be promoting to your existing customers. We all know that it's easier to keep a customer than a new one. It's much less expensive. And so if you can build that loyalty, and most customers, they do want to hear from you. I put out a newsletter on a regular basis, and there was a period of time where I kind of got out of writing my newsletter. And I literally, when I would run into clients, they're like, I really miss getting your newsletter. I don't know what's going on if I don't get that. And I'm like, oh my God. Or the other side of that equation, they're like, oh, I never hear anything from you until I get your newsletter. And I thought, oh, there's another bad problem. So, you know, there are different ways that you can work it, but most customers, especially if they're loyal customers, they don't mind hearing from you. They want to hear. They want to know that you're not running a special and leaving them out of it. You know, they may or may not elect to participate in that special, buy from you on that special, but they like to know what it is. I mean, you know, we all get inundated with a million emails.
Right.
And, you know, I am the queen of delete, 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 delete. But if I, but I do look to see who it's coming from before I delete it. And sometimes it's like, oh, yes, I do. I just had a chair in my yard break this weekend. It was wood and it, you know, my father sat in it and the bottom fell out. And I'm like, okay. And then, you know, 2 days later, I got an email alert that, you know, a company that I've bought from in the past is having a sale on outdoor furniture. So, of course, I looked at it. I had all of a sudden a need. And I probably would have looked at it anyway because I had noticed it was starting to look wear. But if they weren't sending it to me, I probably would have gone to somebody else to make that purchase. So don't be afraid to talk to your existing customers. Now, the problem that you can have is, you know, if you're emailing them every couple of hours, every day, most of the time I recommend, you know, once or twice a week maximum if you're actually sending a solicitation for something of yours that you want them to purchase. Maximum once to twice a week. Sometimes even just once a month is enough, depending on what you are selling. But at the same token, using social media and some of the other things is giving out information where you're not asking them to buy something, that you're just being top of mind and providing information. Depending on what you sell, you can always, I write a lot, and I have several different blogs, posts that I do, different newsletters that I write, different, you know, columns that I write for, and, you know, I send them all out to all my list, and I get comments back all the time, oh, this was so helpful. I'm not asking them to buy anything from me at that point in time, but I'm, again, showing them that I'm knowledgeable about the subject and that they can, you know, count on me if they do need me about something, and I'm staying top of mind. So even if you're not soliciting all the time, you do want to stay in touch with your loyal customers, because one of the things you want to do is make sure they stay loyal to you. I mean, if you're out of sight, you're out of mind. I mean, we all know that, out of sight, out of mind. And it is
absolutely
so true. I mean, I also
want to focus or emphasize what you said there about sharing content, good, useful content with your clients. It isn't just about selling, selling, selling. It's also about delivering value, and that value could be a video. It could be a funny cartoon. It could be content that you posted on other sites or even on your site. It doesn't matter. But if it's something related to your industry, your business, your clients, their problem, then that is something they might want to know about. Absolutely.
And that's and people do. They want to know that you care about them and that you are you're a partner with them. I don't consider any of my clients, I don't like to be considered a vendor for them. I want to be their partner.
Yes.
It's so
I like
much
that.
Partner and friend. I mean, I
yes.
want to be their partner, friend partner, because it's so much harder to fire a friend and partner versus a vendor.
Yes. Absolutely.
So if I'm providing them valuable content on a regular basis and they read it and they enjoy it, they get something out of it, it might be a giggle if it's a cartoon, or it might be, oh, wow, I didn't realize I could do that with Hootsuite, or I didn't realize that there was this new form out there that I could be using, or, you know, whatever, then they feel that I care about them. And many times it's, you know, I do send notes to my clients and say, hey, did you happen to see this? It may or may not have been something that I wrote, but, you know, I was thinking about you, I saw this, and I thought it would be valuable for you. So most of my clients have been with me 10, 15, 20 years for that very reason. And a lot of people, the other thing that I find interesting is a lot of times people are holding, their business close to the vest because they're afraid of their competition.
Right.
They don't want to put out a particular promotion because they don't want their competition to see that they have this special promotion going. Well, you know, if your client is going to move to them, they're going to move to them if you're not providing them the value and the service that they require. So it doesn't matter what you put out there. And competition is good. I mean, it makes you look good in most cases. I find it makes us look good all the time when we go in and pitch a new client and they're like, oh, wow, we had no idea that this is the way it could be. because they've been working with someone that may or may not have been in the business as long, or you know, maybe they don't offer the same services, or what have you. So that's another piece of advice. Don't be afraid of your competition. You know, the competition is it's going to be around forever. You know, no one is going to have, you know, 100% of the market, and you don't want 100% of the market, because there are a lot of customers within that market that aren't right for you. I mean, when I first started in business,
let's talk about that real quick.
No, go ahead.
Because I think that this is another area where people have a tough time with, and that is figuring out who their ideal clients are. Who should they be, you know, advertising and promoting to? Talk about how can you start to figure out who your best customer is.
Well, hopefully you have a database, and if you don't, start one. You can just start, you know, who bought what, when, how much, how often, you know, and start assessing, you know, what their demographics are, you know, what are their age, maybe their income. You know, you may or may not be able to get that information from them, but you might. I mean, you could always send out a little short survey, and you ask some generic questions, and lots of times people will go ahead and answer them, because you want to know who your best customers are. You know, are they affluent, not affluent? But your best customer is not necessarily the person that comes in and buys your sale item every week. They may not be a profitable customer for you, because that's what you're looking for, is that profitable customer.
Mm.
When I first started in business, I took everybody because I felt I needed everybody. But as my business grew, I started divorcing clients because they were costing me more money than I was making on them in my time, in my energy, in samples, and what have you. So, you know, look at, you know, your customer base and get a good understanding of, okay, are they all coming within 5 miles of my business? Do they all live, work within 5 miles of my business? Great. So now I don't have to worry about necessarily, unless I want to expand, advertising or marketing outside of that 5 mile radius of my business. A lot of people don't want to drive more than 5 miles to anything. So if you're a retail establishment or a, you know, that type of service establishment where people have to come into you, you know, they're not necessarily, unless they're commuting, going to go 5 miles out of their comfort zone to get to you. So you know, look at where are they coming from, what type of personality are they, what type of, you know, because you also want to look at the psychographics. You know, what makes them motivated to buy your service or your product.
Yes.
So
yes.
If you can put that kind of database together, it makes a huge difference. I mean, I know for me, majority of my clients and my best clients are corporations. I work with corporate marketing departments, and I do very little with small businesses, primarily because it's just I'm too expensive for them now, unfortunately. But I found that's my model that works best, because I come from a corporate marketing background. I speak their language, and it makes it easier for me to work with them, because I understand their internal struggles that they have to go through to get things approved and done, and I can work in fast environments. So, but others, you know, would like to work much more with a smaller business, work with the owner of a business, those types of things. So you can kind of get a sense of the overall view of your customers, and that's what's really key, and what a lot of people forget to look at. They just open their door and they think that everybody coming in that door is going to be their primary customer. But think about it. If you open it up, and the first thing they do, they buy a couple of items, then they bring two of them back out of the three they bought, and then the next time they buy three items and they bring another two back. And then, I mean, there's all these expenses that you don't think about that you know, cost you, you know, in the long run for your business. So it's not just how much they're buying, it's how much that them buying costs you to have that customer in your store or taking care of your business.
Yes, absolutely. No, I like that. Great, great, great tips there. You know, what's interesting is back to how we started the show about, again, promotion and marketing. There is a great quote by Estee Lauder, and she says, when I believe in a product, I market the heck out of it. You know, and I say this because I think that there's a problem sometimes with people who don't believe enough in their product. Because if you really believe in your product, if you really believe it can solve that solution for your client, why wouldn't you want them to have it?
Exactly. People are afraid of their own success.
Yes. Yes, and you know what? And part of that is we're also afraid of being rejected. We're afraid of being all these other things. But let me tell you, the person who gets the most rejection wins. Period.
Absolutely. I mean it, and that's the other thing. You know, that's a perfect part of that is people take it personally.
Yes.
When someone rejects them. You know, I call it dialing for dollars. I mean, I there are certain times of the week or that I, you know, I'm picking up the phone, I'm calling clients, I'm calling prospects, and I call it dialing for dollars. And some people may say no, some people may not answer the call, some people, you know, I'm on their voicemail, they may never call me back. But, you know, there's a study that was done many years ago, and I can't remember by who, but said that it took 8 to 12 contacts to get somebody to actually buy, not 1 through 3. But 8 to 12. So many of people will start that process, and they'll make one phone call, and they may or may not get a person on the phone. Maybe they leave a message, and then they make a second one, then they make a third one. Then they're afraid they're being a pest, so they stop making that phone call. Well, it takes 5 or 6 more before someone will actually pick up the phone or listen to your pitch. So, you know, a lot of us have a tendency to give up before it's time. And so, you know, I have a running list, and, you know, every few days I'm dialing for dollars. That's the way I put it in my own brain. Okay, I'm dialing for dollars. You know, so it's my little motivator for me and to know that I'm not going to give up. And I know, okay, well, I've only contacted this person 7 times. So I've got at least 3 or 4 before they may or may not respond to me. And sometimes they're going to come back and say, you know, thanks for being a you know, persistent, pleasantly persistent is what I've been called. but thanks for being pleasantly persistent, but at this time we don't need your services. I'm like, okay, thanks for letting me know. I'll put you on and, you know, check back in 6 months. And they're like, oh, okay, great. But I don't take it personally that they're not going to take on my services at this point in time. You know, it's all timing. So that's another thing. You know, please don't be personal about it that they're rejecting you.
Right. Absolutely. And you know what? Look, next time I want everybody to start paying attention to when they buy something. And here's a great example. There's a gentleman, I just retained his services, and I have been watching his ads for over a year.
Mm-hmm.
So you think your advertising is not working, but it is working. I just wasn't ready to buy from this guy a year ago. I didn't know who he was. I had to get to know him. It was the right timing for me. 12 months from the first time I saw his ad, maybe it might have been 14 months, I retained his services. And that happens. That's just part of marketing promotion. That's why it takes so long. That's why you can't ever stop. It does take time. It has to incubate. You were
going to say something. Exactly. There was an ad a long time ago by McGraw-Hill, the magazine publisher, and it had an older gentleman sitting in a chair, and it said something to the effect of, you know, I don't know who you are. I don't know what you represent. I don't know what your services are. I don't know, you know, and it just went all these, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. And at the end it said, now, what is it that you wanted to sell me?
Yes. I love it.
So
I love
what
it.
You just said is exactly that, is that, you know, we put out one ad, per se, and we think that's our marketing campaign. And
yes.
We put that out there, or one direct mail piece, or one social media post, and we think, okay, people should know who I am now. Well, they don't. And just like you just said, you know, it takes 12 to 14 months for you to repeatedly be seeing this individual's advertising, get an understanding of who they were. Maybe you got some references, maybe not. But you know, all of a sudden you're like, okay, I've seen this person enough. They're a, you know, long-term business. They've been around. They seem to know what they're doing. I think I'm going to give them a call.
Yes, absolutely. I love it. Yep. I'm looking at the famous McGraw-Hill ad. I don't know who you are. I don't know your company. I don't know your products. I don't know your what your company stands for. I don't know your company's customers. I don't know your company's records. I don't know your company's reputation. Now, what is it you wanted to sell me? And, you know, what's interesting about this is right in here, not only is this teaching you something, but it's also there's layers here because, you know, I don't know your products. You could do a bunch of different campaigns just regarding your products. I don't know who your customers are. You could talk about your customers. Hey, you know, our customers have a problem with this, and we've solved it for them. So you could talk about your customers.
Exactly.
So it's not just pounding them over the head with who you are, but maybe your customers, and that person can relate that way. So there's a lot of great stuff. We are out of time, Danette, and so I'd love to bring
that
it back
went
and
fast.
Talk more. That went fast. I'd love to bring it back and talk more. It was great to have you on the show, and
we'll
have you back soon.
All right. Sounds like a plan.
All righty. Good stuff there from Danette Gossett, Gossett Marketing. And just a lot of great stuff there, a lot of nuggets. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool.
You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. My next guest, Jasmine Debiens. Jasmine is a life coach and business advisor to various professions. Jasmine is an inspires to everyone she comes into contact with kind of person. In her unusual, honest, no-nonsense, good-humor approach, Jasmine guides people to discover the barriers preventing them from connecting to their inner wisdom and potential success. She is constantly exploring transformation, passionate and kind. She opens the doors to possibility with unconditional love and without judgment, allowing people to be who they are. Ultimately, allowing them to find success and happiness in the work and in life. Jasmine Debiens, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Well, thank you for having me.
You bet.
I'm so excited.
Bet.
I'm so excited to be here. I was happy to get your invitation.
Well, I'm excited to have you here, and let's talk about this. So you co-wrote a book with my friend Joe Vitale. The book is called The Midas Touch. So why don't you talk about that? What is the Midas Touch?
Well, are you familiar, Bert, with King Midas?
I am familiar with King Midas.
You are? I'm asking because I had no idea who he was. But I discovered through my studies that King Midas was basically, in Greek mythology, he was the possessor of the Midas touch. Basically what he did, everything he touched turned into gold. And the book is basically, the Midas Touch book is a compilation of miscellaneous and different experts from around the world, and we all share different stories in one form or another of how to succeed, how to reach it, how to be enlightened. So that's what the book is.
I love it. I love it. Yes, absolutely. And it's a great idea. I think it was great. It's a great way reach different customers, and also kind of a new adventure for those authors that got involved with Joe.
Yeah, it's very interesting because you're going to see that in the book you've got different accesses, right? You've got people that are going to talk about how the customer how to talk to the customers, and then you've got other people that are going to tell you, here's what you're doing while you're talking to the customer. You know, like, because there's two aspects in the sales process, right? There's what they're hearing, and then what you're hearing and what you're giving out to them.
Yeah.
And so that's what's interesting in this book, is that as you flip through the chapters, one time somebody's going to talk how to market your product, and the other time is gonna, they're going to talk about, well, here's what you're doing. Like me, that's what I do. You know, I say, what are you generating as an energy that makes your customer respond?
Yes, absolutely. You know, and let's talk about this real quick, because part of your thing that you work with is barriers that we all create, because, and I want to get your opinion on this. It took me a long time to realize this, but there is no out there, right? All the barriers that we have in our lives are self-made barriers.
Yes, yes, definitely. That is a hard concept to grasp because you know, we've got to own it. And as human
yes.
beings, we don't want to own that we're creating the fear, or we don't want to own that we're creating the, it could be hatred, it could be anything, right? We don't want to own that kind of stuff. But the trick is that once we actually see that what we're feeling, what we're experiencing is we've created it, once we can see that, we've got the power all of a sudden. When it's something outside of us, then we're no longer in control, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It gets like, okay, well, it's not my fault if I'm angry, it's their fault, right? Like if we go into that thinking mode, but if we go, wait, I'm afraid or I'm angry because of what I'm presently thinking or generating inside of me, I can change that, then all of a sudden we're in control. We can do something about it.
Yes, I like that. I like that. You know what, and I want to get real specific, because there are some people listening and saying, hey, well, Bert or Jasmine, you know, that's not true. You know, I'm a female, and there's a lot of barriers for females in a male-dominated society. Or somebody might be saying, hey, you know, I'm of a different race, and so therefore I'm facing some racism, and I'm not in control of those barriers. What do you say to that?
Well, I'm not saying that there's no barrier out there. There's a barrier out there, but how do you deal with it?
Mm-hmm.
Is the thing, right? How are you going to deal with it? Are you going to deal with it like, you know, I mean, you have some people out there that are literally saying, yeah, well, fine, I don't like that. I'm going to find another way around it. That's just
yeah.
their way of seeing it, right? So it's
well,
all
right.
about thinking. Yeah, like the way, you know, let me explain a little bit, like what I come from a three principles basis, okay? The three
okay.
principles are mind, thought, consciousness, okay? Now, the three principles is basically our operating systems. That's what lies behind what creates all human experience, okay? It generates our feelings, our emotion, our moods, our thoughts, our behaviors, but it also creates the love, the peace, you know, it creates everything. Once I discovered that what was behind my experience in life was this, it was like that was the OS. I was totally excited because I'm a computer girl. You know, I've learned how to work operating systems. You know, I've started with DOS and now I'm in Windows. But knowing, like, my mind was already programmed to think this way, okay? Like, basically, our thinking gives us our experience.
Right.
So if my experience is life is hard, then life is hard. Now, when I say all of this, most people go on the defensive and tell me, are you telling me my life is not hard? And I'm like, no, actually, I believe you. Your life is hard. Because that's what you're saying. And if that's what you're saying, then you're most definitely experiencing it. Our life is what we experience, and we experience our thoughts.
Yes,
our thoughts.
I agree with that. And you know what? And back to, you know, the stuff about barriers, because I do want to kind of, you know, talk about this a little bit more and then we can move on. And I like what you said there. Everybody might have, quote, barriers, but it's how you, like you said, how you respond to them. For example, Muhammad Ali, who just passed away, he was a black man at a time where America was very racist. And and he overcame all that. Not only did he overcome, he stood up. He, you know, he really, what do you call it, made some noise, if you will. I mean, the guy stood up for himself, and he stood up for others. You know, and so there's one way where you could look at it and say his barriers of being a black man in a racist white America did not stop him. He would not let that stop him, even though a couple of times it did slow him down. You know, another gentleman who I know personally is Arnold Schwarzenegger. When Arnold said, "Hey, I'm leaving bodybuilding to go into the movies," he was told, "No, you know, your name's too big, your accent is too ugly, you're over muscular, you're never going to make it as a movie star." And all those things, especially his accent, is what most people can imitate about him right away. Just about everybody can make some kind of Arnold, what do you call it, imitation. So, so the barriers that he had, supposedly had, didn't stop him. And it could have. I mean, bottom line, it could have.
Yeah, I think that the key word that you said there was supposedly had.
Yes.
Like maybe everybody else around him believed it was a barrier, but for him it wasn't.
Right.
So, yeah, he had to go through – because if I have thinking about something, you have thinking about something, then most of us, we agree. Like this is what happens in society, right? You think this – you tell me, I say, I agree, right? Now,
all right.
Arnold and Mohammed said, no, I don't agree. Here, I'm going to give you my thinking. Here's what I can do. You're telling me I can't do this? Well, here's what I can do. I can do it. And then he just kept thinking it, kept thinking, this is what I can do. And then he persisted and continued, and he did it. And then all of a sudden people said, wow, he overcame the barriers. But for him, it wasn't a barrier. Do you understand?
Yes.
That's what I think. That's what I think. I mean, you know, I'm French-Canadian, and I'm like, in my mind, I'm thinking, Bert is calling me, right, to have this call with you. And I'm thinking, but I'm French-Canadian, and I'm in Quebec. I'm just little old Jasmine. Why should I talk to Bert? And that's my thinking. But then I was just like, well, Bert called me. I'm like, yes, I'm there, Bert.
But you know what?
You understand?
That's a great example, because there's a lot of times in our lives when opportunity knocks, and we either shrink away or we run towards it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I have a great example for you of what our thinking, and I'm going to take something very superficial, okay? And then after that, it's just about when we need to practice this. We're used to just thinking a certain way and looking at one thing and then just believing this thing constantly, right? But we just have to train our mind to think differently. So I'm going to give you an example of how you experience your feelings, okay? Just imagine it's Friday, 4:30, work ends at 5. Now, you're sitting at your desk, and at the top drawer, on your top drawer of your desk, there's a pair of plane tickets for Sunday to Maui with the love of your life. 2 weeks of pure bliss, R&R, sun, beach all days, your plan. How are you feeling right now?
Great.
Yeah, ecstatic, like you're totally happy. Now, let's flash forward. 2 weeks, it's your last day on the beach. You're lying in the chair. You have a great suntan. The sun is beaming on your warm skin. And you think, I should put lotion. as you reach in your bag to get your return tickets, all of a sudden, you see your, no, as you reach for your, not your return tickets, your lotion, see your return tickets, right? And all of a sudden you remember, oh, I forgot to send this important email before I left. Oh, man, I'm going to get it when I get back. How are you feeling now?
Concerned or nervous or scared, right?
Worried, concerned, yeah. But you're still sitting in the beach. You still have the beautiful sun. Now, what's changed? Your thinking.
My focus. Yeah, my thinking, yeah? Absolutely, right.
Yeah. And like, now, like I said, this is a superficial example, right? But we've got, we're machines. Human beings are humans are creatures of habits, right? So
right.
We just go on auto mode. Like, you know, my mom told me when I was 3, go brush your teeth, and now I don't think about it. But we did the same thing with our thinking.
Mm.
You know? We go on auto mode. We're on auto mode. We're on auto mode. Like, you know, earlier I was listening to the show, obviously, and I was thinking, you know, I was listening to the marketing and all of that, and I was thinking of databases. You know, like what I do is databases. Like as a business advisor, I help people build their own databases and figure out who's their target client. And I've trained and coached salespeople. That's really my target. And as I'm training these people to show them how to work the software, I'm hearing all of their fears, you know, what's in their way. And it's just their thought. It's like, yeah, but I can't call this person. I just talked to him 3 months ago. Yeah, but that was 3 months ago. Why are you stopping there?
Right.
You think something, you think it's true. And then you just go on auto mode. You're just like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. We recycle our same thoughts every single day.
Yes. Man, you know, there's something there. I'm a big believer in that, call it affirmations. You said we recycle our same thoughts. And then we have so much emotion behind these thoughts. No wonder they control us. No wonder they're a reality.
Yeah.
We just have to get better thoughts.
Yeah, well, I think it's about noticing that you have the thought and then knowing that you don't necessarily have to do anything with it. You know, like we were talking about competition a little earlier. You were talking competition.
Yeah.
I love that conversation because a lot of people are like, oh, I got to know what my competition is doing. Let me find out. And let me, like, I'm not saying it's not good to know what your competition is doing. All I'm saying is don't put all your energy there. Once you've seen what they do, what are you going to do about it?
Right.
It's just a shift, a way of looking at things. You know, in my coaching practice, what I do is I tell people, you know, you're not afraid of what you think you're afraid of. You're afraid of what you're thinking.
Mm.
You know how it's a distinction? It's just
okay.
A little distinction. It's a different way of looking at it. And my experience is when I've had these, oh, that's what you mean. The other day, Bert, I was talking with a friend and I said, I just realized I'm focusing on what I didn't do instead of focusing on what I did do. And I've been hearing this forever. You know, in The Secret, like Joe Vitale talks about it. Everybody
yep.
talks about it. Look at what you want. Look at what you do. And I was like, intellectually, I got that you have to focus on what you do, what you want. But I finally internalized it. I finally got it. It's like it's really an experience. It's like experiential. It's not intellectual.
Yeah, you know what? And it's so interesting. And you know, here you are. We all You know, you hear, you had your aha moment. Oh, okay, I get this now. I see how these two connect. And that's the thing. You know, we're constantly getting these aha moments. If we're moving forward, I think that we have to constantly train, whatever you call it, reading, going to seminars, taking courses. We're constantly training ourselves to get better, to have more aha moments so we can change our thinking, therefore change our outcome.
I like the word transformation.
Okay.
It's like, for me, one day my life was totally different, but everything was the same just because of how I was thinking.
Mm-hmm. I like that. All right, we're out of time. I've definitely had a lot of fun with you on the show today. I'd love to bring you back and talk more about transformation and about our thinking. And Jasmine,
I'd love to be back.
Thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you, Bert.
Good stuff there from Jasmine, Coach Jasmine. Just a lot of fun with all our guests today. Good to have you back here on Monday, here on Money for Lunch. And as always, remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.